Good morning here on the Mighty 690 KGGF. I am Matt Jordan here on this Wednesday morning in the 7 o'clock hour. And joined on a Wednesday is the Wildcat Extension District. We've got James Coover in as well as Francis Graves here on this Wednesday morning. And how are you guys both doing this morning?
Doing good.
Good to hear.
Pretty good. Good morning, Matt.
Well, good morning. It's nice to meet you as well, Francis. The first time we've been on together, and so I've interviewed James a few times, but it's nice to meet you. So I'll actually, if you guys have any events you want to talk about, and then Francis, I'll let you have the first segment here.
Great. Yes, we do have some events. We have a lot going on. Most notably, we've got our Makers Fair on September the 17th on Saturday in Parsons. We're really excited. It's a brand new event all day, 9 to 4, at the Research Center in Parsons. And that's going to be a craft fair, kind of promoting some of the local entrepreneurs, as well as hourly demonstrations from our agents on things, everything from ag to cooking demonstrations. Plus, we'll have a 4-H project showcase. In addition to that, we've also got a couple of other ag events coming up, including Wendy Powell, who you hear from sometimes, is helping out with Feeding with Limited Hay in Columbus on August 25th at 7 p.m. We've got some nutrition classes going on in McCune and starting on August 27th. Medicare enrollment is coming up, and we have an event in Parsons on August 31st at 6 p.m., the ABCDs in Medicare, Powerful Tools for Caregivers, which is an important program we offer throughout the year. This time it's virtual, so if you've not been able to attend something like that, you care for a parent or a child that has special needs, consider checking this out. It's September 12th through 17th, just in the middle of the day, virtual. And all of those events, Matt, are on our website at wildcatdistrict.ksu.edu.
All right. Any other events you want to add, or that cover them all? All right. Well, let's get into it here. We're talking back-to-school tips. For parents, but I assume this works for kids as well.
Sure, yeah. So this is just a high stress time. It's always hard when you've got kids going back to school, just changes in routines. It's always demanding, and it can cause stress and anxiety for everyone.
Yeah, I remember, thinking about going back to school, and whether it was having to ride the bus, or but there were things, you're worried about or didn't necessarily want to do, or summer being over and that kind of stuff. So
yeah.
What are some things parents can do if their children are anxious or worried or nervous, whether it's going back to school, maybe they're kindergartner, it's the first time, or maybe they're in middle school and nervous about that?
Yeah, sure. So I have a high school freshman, and she's pretty nervous. And then my younger kids have new teachers. So there's all sorts of reasons to be nervous. We work with KSU Child Development Specialist Bradford Wiles in Extension, and he's talked to us about how it's important for parents to keep talking to their kids as they go back to school, find out what they're feeling, and ask open-ended questions like, what are you afraid of? Or is there anything I can do to help you understand what's going on? It's also okay for us to admit that we have some feelings like that too. We don't want to go overboard. We want to stay age appropriate, but we can connect with our kids by also saying that, change is hard, new routines are stressful, but we're going to handle them together. Here are some ways that when I feel stressed, that, I take a break, I take deep breaths, or I try to remember the good side of things. That gives the kids an ability to connect with us and learn that they can get through this with us.
So, kids sometimes maybe not fully understand what anxiety feels like or what stress feels like, and don't know that they can talk about, what's going on. So what's some ways to maybe get the kids to open up about the anxiety or stress that they're feeling?
Sure. So Dr. Wiles talks about, and you can see this in other areas too, that, open-ended questions are really important. You don't just want to say, how was school? Because you're going to get fine almost every time. But, talking about your day might help them open up about their day. And then think about questions like, what was your favorite part of school today? Or did anyone do anything funny at school? Who did you play with today? That can help you learn more about their friends and their routines and encourage them to share more about their day and their experiences.
So what are some things that can, parents can limit extra stress? Maybe it's outside of going to school, but stress of just life in general.
Sure. So just pay attention to how you're feeling and what you're seeing in your family. I've talked about ag stress here on the radio before, and, you know, it's the same signs. So think about, you know, do you have a short temper? Do you feel like people are more fatigued than normal? It's totally normal for kids to be super tired when they start school. But if they don't ever bounce back, perhaps it's stress. Letting things pile up, not addressing things, overeating or not eating enough. And the first thing to do is just to kind of slow down, you know, recognize those signals in yourself or your kids. And it could be an athlete in high school who's just pushing themselves too hard. We all need downtime. It's really important to have downtime individually and also downtime as a family.
And, you know, routine's probably good to get into, some type of routine, especially in the first few weeks or month of school, which probably isn't easy if you've got, you know, three kids, one's doing soccer, one's doing football, and one's in the band. But definitely, I'm sure some type of, we wake up around this time, we have breakfast, go to school, and that kind of stuff. Routine is probably helpful with this.
Yes, routine's super important, and scientists say that it takes 28 days to really get into a routine. So give yourself a month to really get used to what this feels like. And then anything else besides that routine that can help you feel like you have a sense of control over what's going on, like a family calendar is a great thing. Put it in a place that everyone can see it. That way you have some sort of plan for your day. Everyone can be, you know, have that communication and feel like they know what's coming up next.
So are there any other things that, you know, parents can look out for in their kids when it comes to anxiety with going back to school?
Sure. Dr. Wiles also says, you know, this is a great time to reestablish that, you know, family mealtime is really important. If you can swing it, it's really wonderful to plan to eat together, turn off your electronics, talking with each other rather than to each other, just saying, hey, don't forget this, you have this tomorrow. But talking with each other builds connection and it reduces stress naturally. There are going to be touchy topics that need to be addressed. Kids are going to have trouble with this or that, or, you know, you might have something big coming up that you need to let everyone know about, but save that for a time other than mealtime, because that will, you know, kind of take away from your ability to de-stress during that meal.
Say maybe family mealtime could be a good way to kind of get through the general things that happen throughout a day at school. Maybe not some of the bigger things like you mentioned, but the generalities of, you know, to give the parent an idea of how that day went for the kid.
Yep, absolutely. That's kind of your reflection time, you know, and that's how you're able to continue to grow and build, because you've lived the experience, you've reflected on it, you get your downtime to rebuild, and then you can conquer the next day.
All right, and it's back to school, and it doesn't matter, you know, I remember being stressed as a elementary student, as a middle school student, as a high school senior for number of reasons. You know, in high school, you're especially senior year, thinking about college and all that other stuff. And it exists for not just grade school kids, but college students as well.
Absolutely. And the parents that are supporting them, you know, the routines just are, you know, you got to get back into it. You think you've done this before, but every year it feels a little bit different and it's an adjustment to get used to it. So just give yourself that time and pay attention to yourself and make sure that you're not, you know, feeling overwhelmed and you're not shutting down and your kids aren't either.
All right. Anything else you want to add on this topic as we kind of...
No, but, you know, anyone can call our offices. We have all sorts of resources on these materials and others. So, you know, we have an independence office here in Montgomery County, 620-331-2690, or you can check us out online, like I said, about our events at wildcatdistrict.ksu.edu.
All right. James, any questions that you have that you want to kind of bounce off this topic, or do you want to get underway?
It's good advice, like, really. I could be a lot more mindful with timing and, you know, family organization. And just, you know, my little son, he's hardly over 1 year old, so.
You've got a few more years.
He's not quite talking yet, but, still at daycare, I mean, connecting all that stuff and the stress routine of even little tiny ones too.
Mm-hmm.
And so making sure that I'm on the same page with my wife and all that stuff. She's a communications major too, like Francis. So we communicate a lot, but still, you know, there's a lot of things to do.
All right. Do you want to get into a little bit of your topic, or do we want to just go on and come back in the 8 o'clock hour?
Yeah. So my topic, completely different. I'm going to be talking about spider mites. And so the two spotted spider mite, is very common in drought years like this one. And so they are out there, especially actually here in Montgomery County. I seem to see quite a few. They're kind of spotty where they are. But this applies to gardeners too, honestly. And so they're out there in the soybean fields and in the gardens, and they just kind of got to be dealt with in dry years like this one. So.
All right. Well, we'll get into that more in the 8 o'clock hour. We'll go ahead and take a break, come back in the 8 o'clock hour, and we'll talk spider mites.
Sounds good.
All right. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. Back here on the Mighty 690 KGGF in the 8 o'clock hour on a Wednesday, and we are joined again by the Wildcat Extension District. In the 7 o'clock hour, we heard about back-to-school stress with Francis, and now we're going to talk to James about spider mites.
And this can apply to basically any farmer with soybean fields, but also gardeners too. And so, like I was saying before the break, you know, tomatoes, green beans, all sorts of other things in the garden, all kinds of plants too, actually. And so spider mites are pretty universal, really. But there are some species they prefer more than others. This will be mostly broadleaves, but basically anything kind of succulent, high in nitrogen, honestly, things that they really like. So what are spider mites? Spider mites are actually little spiders. And so they're not really they're an insect, but they have 8 legs. And so, I mean, it's actually more closely related to the arachnid family. In fact, they're in the arachnid family. And so pretty much instead of eating other little bugs, what they do is feed on plants instead. And so, and they are very tiny. I mean, these mites, they look like little red grains of pepper crawling around, honestly. And so they're very hard to see in the field or in the garden. They're hard to, you know, really to see. So a lot of farmers or gardeners, they'll miss them and they don't realize that they're there. We'll kind of talk a little bit about scouting later and about how to actually get a good idea of what's out there. But for the most part, spider mites are around every single year. I mean, it's every single year there's going to be spider mites. They're universal in every region, honestly, too. But often they're not a significant problem. Just because they're so tiny, there's lots of other beneficials that feed on them. The weather isn't always conducive to their survival. And so, you know, mostly don't worry about it. But during dry weather, years just like this one, their numbers can explode. I mean, it can just be a massive quantity of spider mites because all those things that control their populations become lesser during drought years like this one. Also, their damage is amplified in years like this one too because they... more or less, they suck the juices out of the soybeans. And so because they're sucking the juices out of the soybeans are already stressed in drought. And so it amplifies those two things together. So you have something feeding on it, the drought, so they can't replenish themselves. And you'll end up with way worse damage in drought years like this one. So there'll be a little bit more spider mites around there too. And so the soybeans just can't recover very well. The symptomology of spider mites when you're looking at a field is very similar to drought, honestly. And so the two are often confused. They don't realize that those two things are kind of working together. It's the progression, actually. If you're looking at a leaf with a spider bite damage, it'll look almost like stippled. It'll have like little bitty white specks on it, I guess you could say. Basically, it looks like the leaf is being sucked dry. And that's really what's happening. And so it's not flamed around the edges like you would see with drought, but it looks like it's sickly, like maybe some sort of herbicide damage or something like that. And so that's really it. And so if you see some leaves like that, all you really have to do is turn that leaf over because the spider mites are always on the underside of the leaf. They don't crawl around to the top side. They're just not there. And then after that, they'll actually be under a webbing. They are spiders. And so they make a web and they'll be crawling around underneath the webbing underneath that leaf. So if you're wondering if this plant does have spider mites, what you need to do is take a clipboard and a white piece of paper, and you actually shake that leaf on top of that white piece of paper, and then you can see the little spider mites crawling around. And so they'll be little tiny little specks. They're really pretty hard to see, but I mean, they'll be tiny little spiders. that's got to be mites. There's not really anything else that kind of looks like these tiny little mites. So once you do that, you know that it's a pretty good heavy infestation of these spider mites. So how does drought affect the spider mite population? It's actually because the dry weather accelerates the movement of spider mites from the cornfields and all the other grasses. I mean, depending on where you're at, especially around here, you know, all the grasses are kind of dying. Like, they're pretty much drought struck in, and there's not a whole lot left out there. So those spider mites are on the search. And right now, soybean fields are the greenest thing out there. And so that's where they're moving right now, is they're moving into the soybean field because of the dry weather. Especially if there's like a close by hay field or alfalfa field after a cutting, a lot of things are going to be moving in that direction. The dry weather, it helps with the food quality for the spider mites, honestly, because it's concentrating those soybeans. And so it groups everything all together in one small location. Also, there is a certain fungus that will kill spider mites naturally, a lot like grasshoppers. If during wet weather, during the right time period, grasshoppers, when they get to a huge population, there's a fungus that actually takes over their bodies and will kill them. I mean, they could spread between grasshopper to grasshopper. There's a similar fungus for spider mites. And so when they get to a certain point, there's a natural control for them. And this happens during kind of cooler weather. It needs to be about below 90 degrees and kind of humid. For the spider or this fungus to take off, well, that's exactly the opposite of what's happening right now. And so hot weather, it makes it hard for the predatory species. They don't reproduce as well, but the spider mites don't mind it at all. And so the hot weather actually makes their population, their generations, move faster. And you can have 5-7 different generations of spider mites throughout a year. I mean, they're little tiny insects, and so they move really fast. And so their numbers can explode in population in a matter of a few weeks, honestly. And there's very few beneficials this year. I mean, there are quite a few out there, but the dry weather means there's going to be less, just naturally. And it's really kind of hard to control them, honestly. So when it comes to scouting, you know, make sure that you're going out there and look. Don't just look on the field edge. This is true with literally everything. Get out there into the field and actually inspect, because those spider mites are going to be concentrated on the field edge. When you're spraying for them, you kind of got to spray the whole field. But they're going to be worse on the edge. Just like every other insect is worse on the edge of the field. And, you know, once you see them, a lot of farmers like to know, at what level do we spray for them? It's a hard thing to ask, because there's no specific population threshold when it comes to spider mites. A lot of other bugs, like bean leaf beetle, it's 50 per row foot or something like that. You kind of have a general number. Spider mites are too tiny. I mean, you can't really count little spider mites. And so we just go by a general idea of damage. If there's about 15-20% of the leaf area has been reduced, that's about a threshold for spraying. And that's universal, really. And because that 20%, it looks a lot more than it actually is on that 20%. So whether you should spray or not, that's kind of where you feel comfortable spraying. The problem with spraying for spider mites is it could actually make things worse. Spider mites are specific, and so because there's a lot of predatory things that feed on them, any kind of spray is going to kill those beneficials. And as soon as you do that, those spider mites have absolutely no control on their population, because that fungus isn't going to kill them. And so, and their population turnover is very fast, their generation turnover is very fast. So if you got to be careful, because if you kill all those beneficials and you still have a long enough time period that they can hurt your soybeans, they're going to end up making a situation worse. So, you know, it generally takes around 3 weeks from egg to adult. And a lot of these pesticides, they only control the adults. And so, and of course, little nymph stage, they are, you know, anthropods. And so they have a little, if it doesn't control the eggs, within a week time, all those eggs could hatch and you have the exact same population that you did before, honestly. And so there are some pesticides that work better than others. There's some aprethoid bragetherin that works pretty well. There's some organophosphates, which are, these are the two classes of pesticides. Some chlorophyll, some diephamine. Some of those will work pretty well, but there are some pesticides that actually make things worse. So while you're trying to control other things, let's say glutinin clover worms or some thistle caterpillars, you'll end up with a worse situation spraying for them, because then you'll end up killing all the beneficials that were controlling all the spider mites. And it's hard to you have to really hone it in if you have very bad spider mite damage. So, you know, what I would say too, if you spray for spider mite once early, you're going to have to do it again. I mean, there's just going to have to be two population control methods. And the second time, don't respray with the exact same product. They are very easy, because their generations are so fast, they can overcome modes of action of pesticides very fast as well. So, you know, when it comes to these spider mites, they're out there. I mean, honestly, if any farmer's going to see them out in their fields, just kind of monitor, take a look. If you're driving by your soybean field, get out there and look, because it might not just be drought damage. It might actually be spider mites out there. So,
can you be proactive in stopping or reducing? Maybe you notice it on, you know, you got a big operation. You notice it on one field and not on another field. And you said they move quickly. So can you be proactive in stopping the spread of spider mites without just spraying where they are?
Not really, okay. No. So, you know, it's not ever really worth spraying until you know that you have an issue. And soybeans are pretty forgiving when it comes to that, less so in drought years. But it's not ever really worth spraying until you have a problem, because pesticides, they don't last on the leaves that long, honestly. And because the spiders can overcome them so easily, if you spray, it might control them for 2 weeks, or it might be a preventative measure for a couple of weeks, but then they're going to go right back to where they were. So it's hard to be preventative when it comes to pesticides.
You mentioned soybeans being strong. Can other plants recover from spider mites? And what's that process kind of look like?
Yeah. So really, I mean, if you're talking about gardens, for instance, tomatoes, all that, they can recover pretty easily. I mean, because they're feeding directly on the leaf, it's all that plant has to do is just replenish their leaf area, and they never completely kill a leaf like a lot of the other insects. And so the leaf is still photosynthesizing, at least to some degree. So spider mite recovery from the plant's point of view is really not all that hard, honestly. It just takes some time for them to do that. So,
all right. I Googled spider mites to try to grab some questions for you, and there's some very interesting questions on Google. People have obviously been worried about spider mites before. Yeah. My favorite here is, can spider mites get in your hair? So people obviously hear spider and think, you know, a normal spider. But
yeah, they're completely different from a normal spider. And so they are spiders, but, you know, these are tiny little crawly things. And so they're more like chiggers in size, which chiggers, of course, that's a whole other thing. Okay. I mean, they can bite you. Yeah. So that's an issue. But no, spider mites can't bite you. And they don't really crawl on people, so, yeah.
After your plants, not after...
Yeah. They're not interested in you at all. I mean, if you walk through a field, I've had spider mites, like, on my clothes and stuff, but they're pretty innocuous, so...
All right, anything else you want to add about spider mites before we wrap it up here?
No, just, you know, farmers need to be out there checking for them, and, of course, all the other insects, because insects love soybeans. They're the only thing that's green out there right now during drought years like this one, so they are just getting bombarded, honestly. So now's the time to check on them.
All right. Do you want to remind, as we wrap up, remind us about some events going on one more time?
Sure.
Like we did to start, for those who might have missed it in the 7 o'clock hour.
Absolutely. So we've got a Feeding with Limited Hay workshop coming up on August the 25th, which is tomorrow, in Columbus at 7 p.m. We have some nutrition classes starting up in McCune on August the 27th. Medicare enrollment's coming up, and we've been getting calls. So we have a program on August 31st in Parsons at 6, the ABC and D's of Medicare, and then a virtual Powerful Tools for Caregivers, September 12th through 17th in the middle of the day. It's an online class. It's $5. And then our big event that we're all really excited about is our Makers Fair and Extension Expo on Saturday, September 17th from 9 to 4 at the Big Research Center on Highway 400 in Parsons. All of us are going to be there that day. We're going to be doing demos throughout the day. In addition, there'll be a craft fair supporting some local entrepreneurs, a couple of food trucks, and then a 4-H project showcase and petting zoo.
All right. Thank you both for coming in this morning here on this Wednesday, and we'll talk to more extension agents next week.
Thank you, Matt.
All right. You've been listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF.